Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. We are here today to do Chapter 14, Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback. And it's an interesting chapter. It's a quick one, I think. So maybe this episode will be shorter than the others.
Optimistically, but probably not.
Yeah. But I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And yeah, so let's dive in with the chapter summary. It's my turn this week to do it. So in the previous chapters, we've kind of been building towards this whole thing with Snape and Quirrell and the stone. So Quirrell is like the last holdout for Snape getting to the stone. Like, he's Snape's barrier to the stone. I need to set that up before my chapter summary. So Quirrell seems to be growing paler and thinner, according to Harry's perception, but he is holding out against Snape. Meanwhile, Hermione has started preparing for final exams, and the trio spots Hagrid looking at books on dragons at the library, and they soon discover that he's illegally won a dragon egg off of a stranger at a pub. Harry and company watch the dragon hatch, and Malfoy sees it too because he's spying through the window. The kids, I don't know what it's called, I say the trio a lot, but the kids devise a plan to have Ron's brother Charlie take Norbert the dragon to Romania, which Malfoy also finds out about, and the plan goes off, but Harry, Hermione, and Draco get caught wandering the castle at night. Did I miss anything important?
Not significantly. Like, we're going to go into more detail anyway.
So. Yeah, of course. But that's the basics of the chapter. So I think I want to start at that bit about Quirrell at the beginning of the chapter.
I read the beginning of this chapter several times trying to figure out, wait, what am is did I skip a page? Like, the cue is big. This is the beginning of the chapter.
Yeah, it's called a drop cap.
Sure. but I was like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's been a while since I read the last chapter, so I went back and looked, and the last chapter ends with, "So you mean the stone's only safe as long as Quirrell stands up to Snape?" said Hermione in alarm. "It'll be gone by next Tuesday," said Ron. So with that context, starting the chapter with Quirrell, however, must have been braver than they thought.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a weird start in that it's a like direct continuation of the thought from the previous chapter. I feel like in the Harry Potter books, at least, it's not usually that, it doesn't usually flow like that.
Yeah.
So it was a little weird.
Yeah, I needed that context from the last, like, yes, I needed to know what happened in the last chapter, obviously, but just, I was very confused looking at this.
Yeah, you didn't just need the context, you needed, like, the actual previous sentence.
Yeah.
yeah, but I like the idea. So they see Quirrell kind of diminishing and getting paler and thinner, like I said in the chapter summary. And the way that they react to that is Harry starts giving Quirrell encouraging smiles when he passes him in the halls. And Ron stops people from making fun of Quirrell's stutter, which is a little troubling because it implies that they were not previously calling out others for making fun of Quirrell's stutter.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm going to be supportive of him just because he's being tortured by Snape.
Otherwise, he's fair game.
Yeah.
Which, that was a little weird, but I do think it's kind of sweet to picture Harry, like, cheering Quirrell on in the hallways with little smiles.
Yeah.
But Hermione is in top form in this chapter. She has so many incredible moments, like, even on compared to all the other chapters where she's amazing. This one is really, really good for Hermione. So she's like freaking out about their final exams, and they say that it's Easter. So this is like April, and presumably their final exams are like June.
Well, we know that it's 10 weeks away from the exams.
Yeah. So there's time.
Like, yes, exactly.
There's quite a bit of time. But Hermione is making study schedules, not only for herself, but for Ron and Harry eventually as well, and color coding her notes, which is just amazing. I aspire to Hermione's level of scholastic dedication. She's so good. And then also early on, she says that the exams are very important when Ron and Harry are like, dude, it's 10 weeks away. Like, what are you thinking about this for? She says that they're very important and that she shouldn't, that she should have started studying months ago and she doesn't know what's gotten into her. I love her so much.
And I like the idea that she's so disappointed that she spent those months. She wasted those months in the library researching something else.
I know.
Researching something else.
Like, I wonder what her ideal time period is for, like, starting studying. Like, she says 10 weeks out is too late. So, like, when would she have started if she had no other distractions?
I mean, she started in the summer. She started studying for those exams the summer before attending Hogwarts.
Before she had ever, like, seen magic.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her so much. She's so good this whole chapter. But those were two things early on. But so the first kind of scene we get is they're all sitting in the library studying for exams by Hermione's demand. And they see Hagrid, but before they see Hagrid, Harry is studying Dittany in a herbology textbook. And I pulled this out because Dittany is going to become really, really important in Deathly Hallows, the last book. So when we get there in 600 years, we can talk more about Dittany. But I did some research on Dittany regardless. So it's an actual plant, which I didn't know. I thought it was just like a fictional thing in the Harry Potter universe, but it is a real plant. It is named for the Dicte mountain range in Crete, which is an island in Greece, off Greece. I don't know. Yeah, it's named for the Dicte mountain range, which is where it grows. And it's used for flavoring and food and medicinal purposes in real life, which is cool. Obviously, it's magic medicine in the Harry Potter universe, but it is actually used for medicinal purposes in the real world. And it goes as far back as ancient Greece. Aristotle writes that it has the power to eject arrows from the body, which is a very poetic way of describing a healing plant to me.
Yeah.
The Cretan name for it is, and I'm sorry if I pronounce all these things wrong, Arantos, or love herb. Eros is the Greek god of love. He's Cupid in Roman, the Roman pantheon, but he's Eros in Greek. But he's better known as Cupid. So Eros, Arantos, love herb. And it's mentioned in the Aeneid, Virgil's Aeneid. I think I'm saying that right, too. All of this Greek stuff, I haven't read the Aeneid, but I've read pieces of it. I've read it, but I never, like, heard it pronounced. So I'm trying. It's mentioned in the Aeneid. Venus heals Aeneas with it. Aeneas is like the hero. It's an epic poem by Virgil. Yeah. And it's basically, I'm going into this rant because Rowling has a huge background in the classics. Like, she studied them a lot in university. And we see that all throughout these stupid books. And so Dittany is, I think, one of the first big examples of it. And it's also part of a pattern that's really interesting in the Harry Potter books of healing stuff, like healing herbs, healing potions, healing spells, all coming from a Greek origin. Which she does because so much of modern medicine is built off of the Greeks, and so much of our terminology for modern medicine is built from the Greek language. So I like seeing that relationship and how she borrows specific things from specific languages and cultures to make it of a certain type. I don't know. Yeah. So that was a long rant about Dittany, which is like a throwaway line that Harry is just like mindlessly looking at in a herbology textbook.
Well, I thought it was kind of clever that she brought up that he was looking up uses for Dittany, and then not long after, like in that same chapter, Ron gets seriously hurt and has to go to the hospital wing.
I was so distracted by all this research that I did not put that together. So, good one. Good call on that. Yeah. But yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if they used Dittany to heal Ron's messed up hand.
Well, I did some research into healing spells and who knows?
Yeah, we'll get into that with Spell of the Week, I guess. But so they're sitting in the library and Ron freaks out because he sees Hagrid there. And it's a really weird moment because Ron is just like, oh, Hagrid, what are you doing in the library? It's so mean. Like, Hagrid can read, too.
Well, they never talk about professors in the library. So obviously they're allowed in there,
yeah.
But it's primarily the students' library.
Well, sure, but like there's the restricted section there, which I feel like we did talk about the restricted section and like why there's a restricted section. I would have to presume that it is partly there for the teachers.
Yes, the teachers can use it, but we just never hear about it. So it was just like a surprise. Hey, anybody but...
I don't think so. I think it was specifically because it was Hagrid.
It might have also been
the presumption being Hagrid is stupid. I didn't know Hagrid can read. Here he is looking at books.
No, I think Ron was excited to have a distraction.
Maybe. Okay, that's fair. That's possible.
Just go straight into shaming Hagrid? Is that what you're going
to
do?
Let me look. I'm not trying to shame Hagrid. I'm saying that Ron is shaming Hagrid. Where's the exact line? Hagrid, what are you doing in the library? That's what he says verbatim.
Verbatim.
Verbatim. Whatever. That's what he says. Hagrid, what are you doing in the library? Not teacher. I didn't know teachers could be in the library.
Obviously, teachers are allowed in the library.
It's weird. It's mean. I definitely think the implication is we are surprised that Hagrid is in the library.
I mean, Hagrid's the groundskeeper.
Doesn't mean he can't read books.
I know. But like, he's got his own house. He's got...
I'm sure that the professors have like a room of their own.
I know, but I'm sure if they saw like McGonagall in the library, they would at least say hi.
To McGonagall?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, all right.
You gotta say hi to McGonagall. Yeah, I mean, Rowling immediately goes out of her way to say like, oh, he looks out of place here in his moleskin overcoat.
Still, it really does feel like a knock on Hagrid's intelligence.
I don't think so.
Okay. As long as that's your opinion.
That is my opinion.
So Hagrid's looking at books and they kind of scare him away. And then Ron goes over to where Hagrid was looking and finds all these books on dragons. And he's like, Hagrid better not be looking at getting a dragon because they were outlawed in 1709. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm. They weren't just like, oh, why is he reading a book? They ask him what he's doing, and he says, oh, just looking in a suspicious way, and they immediately catch on.
Yeah.
And guess what? They're right.
Yes. Yeah. So they go down to Hagrid's cottage. Hagrid...
No,
go on.
He invites them down to his cottage because they're shouting in the library about the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone.
Mm-hmm. Philosophers. We're sticking with philosophers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he invites them down because they're screaming in the library about
they're like, what's Nicholas Flamel? Where's Fluffy? Like, how do you get past Fluffy? All this stuff.
Yeah, all these secrets that they found out. Oh, and I love, you're not still looking for Nicholas Flamel. Oh, we found out about that ages ago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, when's the last time they talked to Hagrid?
That's true. I mean, it's not like they're filling him in on all these revelations that they've had. They really just kind of like pump him for info when they need it.
Yeah. In this book, it does seem kind of like they're just using Hagrid a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, especially the way Hermione treats him later when she like manipulates him into telling them stuff about the stone. But Hagrid says, like, come down to my cottage later. I'm not telling you, I'm going to tell you the answers to all these things, but stop screaming it in the library because we're all going to get in trouble here. And maybe part of that is that like he doesn't want to draw attention to himself in the library looking at books about breeding dragons.
I'm sure it's mostly the incredibly important secret stone that's hidden within the walls of the school he's currently in.
That these 11-year-olds are screaming about in the library. So they go down to his cottage and there is a litany of weird foods that Hagrid tries to serve these children in his cabin, but I think these are the weirdest ones. He offers them stoat sandwiches, which I did not know what a stoat sandwich was because I've never encountered them in my normal life, but I thought maybe it was a weird, like, English thing. apparently, a stoat is a weasel. And he's trying to feed them weasel meat sandwiches.
Yeah, it's like a rabbit sandwich.
I don't think
people so. Eat rabbit.
Do people eat weasel?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess Hagrid does, but woof.
I mean, if you're going to wear a moleskin coat, you got to kill a lot of moles.
Yeah, especially if you're Hagrid's size. But a weasel sandwich?
He needed a scarf.
The children decline.
Yes.
But so they ask Hagrid all these questions about like what else is guarding the stone? Like, is it just Fluffy? They know obviously that Quirrell has something there because they know that Snape is trying to shake it out of him, or that's what they think they know.
Yeah, so they convince him, and they only convince him after Hermione really sweet
talks him. Yeah, she butters him up. She's like, Hagrid, we want to know, Dumbledore entrusted you with this great responsibility, and we just want to know who he trusts as much
aside
as you.
From you. Yeah.
11 years old Hermione Granger. Oh, she's so good.
Yeah, but he gives them the list of Professor Sprout, Professor Flitwick, Professor McGonagall, Professor Quirrell, Dumbledore himself, and after a nice pause, Professor Snape.
Yeah, he forgets Snape.
Yeah. Oh, right. And Snape, the person that you've been accusing.
All the other professors, like, in the school.
Right off the top of his head.
Yeah.
And then, oh, right, Snape, too.
There's, like, two other professors, and he forgets about Snape. It's, ugh. So Hagrid kind of, well, they changed the subject because Harry's like, Hagrid, it's 8,000 degrees in here. Can we open a window, please? And Hagrid's like, no. And they find out about the dragon egg.
Just sitting in a fire underneath his pot.
Yeah.
Which he gives away right away.
Oh,
he just like, why is it so hot in here? He stares at the fire.
The dragon egg. I mean, we've established at this point that Hagrid is terrible at keeping secrets. But
yeah. And I'm not sure if it's from everyone or just these three, but I'm going to go with everyone.
I think everyone.
Yeah.
He's at least loyal, though.
Yes.
Like, if he knew that he was, like, selling out Dumbledore by spilling these secrets, I think that that would change things a little bit. Like, he might be more guarded, but
yeah, I think he's more open, especially with it being Harry Potter.
Yes. Yeah. But they're like, how are you going to raise a dragon, Hagrid? And he's like, well, I've been doing some reading. And he shows them a book that he got out of the library called Dragon Breeding for Pleasure and Profit. My question here is, with dragon breeding being outlawed in 1709, as Ron tells us, and it being 1991 in this book right now, why does Hogwarts still have this book in their library?
For research and history.
Dragon breeding for pleasure and profit.
Like, yeah, you don't just erase something because a law changes.
Well, but like, there are other books that are like different species of dragons, which is like reference and everything. But I don't know, man, because this has like step-by-step instructions on how to keep a dragon in your home.
Well, if the laws ever change, we'll need that book.
Yeah, I guess too, theoretically, like somebody like Charlie, Ron's brother, who's like interested in dragons, mm-hmm. would want to read a book like this when he's in school.
Yeah, it's illegal in just Britain.
Yeah, it seems weird that they have this book just freely available.
Well, I mean, he does have access to the restricted section, but I'm not going to say he wasn't in there. Well, actually, weird. We don't know he has access, but we can assume that because he's a professor, maybe.
I mean, he's not a professor at this point.
Well,
he's staff. Like, he's a step above there. Filch.
Well, Filch can get himself into the restricted
That's
section.
That's true. Okay. Well, but Filch is also, like, the caretaker of the building, so he's got to have keys to everything.
Yeah, but Hagrid's the groundskeeper.
And he's the keeper of keys, so.
Yeah. So I think if anyone has a key, it's Rubius Hagrid, the
keeper of keys and grounds keys. At Hogwarts. Yeah. That's his line, probably in the movie. So Hagrid's telling them all this about his plan to, you know, raise the dragon in his house and everything. And Hermione's like, Hagrid, you live in a wooden home. And then there's just like a break there. And then it's like the next day. It's so funny. It's so good. I love Hermione.
But I mean, you know, if that conversation continued, it didn't get anywhere from there.
Oh, no. Yeah. It was just like, we'll see. So they have the idea, seeing that the dragon is like eating Hagrid every day and getting too big for the hut. Harry has the idea to get in contact with Charlie, Ron's brother, mm-hmm. who's studying dragons in Romania, and seeing if Charlie can take the dragon away, because Hagrid obviously can't keep it there because it's illegal. Charlie's letter made me smile because it's just like, dear Ron, how are you? Of course I can help you with this illegal scheme. And
I mean, he's a Weasley.
He's a Weasley. And like I've said before, that Ron is Harry's like ride or die friend. And I think that I have to apply that to like basically all the Weasleys, with maybe one exception, that like they are all ride or die.
Yeah.
And I guess Charlie is probably pretty used to his brothers approaching him with weird schemes like this.
Plus, he was very happy to take a dragon.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So they get in touch with Charlie, and Charlie says he's got some friends that are going to be visiting him soon so they can come pick up the dragon, and they hatch this whole plan. we said that Malfoy sees the dragon hatch, right?
Well, you said it during your summary.
Yeah, yeah. So Malfoy knows about the dragon.
Malfoy knows about the dragon. He, for some reason, spends a full week keeping it a complete secret.
That was one of my questions, too. I don't know why he doesn't tell someone immediately, because the movie condenses this. Like, Malfoy sees the dragon hatch and immediately goes to McGonagall.
Yeah.
But, like, in this one, like you said, he spends a lot of time just, like, holding it over their heads. And I get wanting it as blackmail material, but, like, he's got something really good already. Like, it's not like he needs to extricate more information out of them.
I think he just likes torturing them.
Maybe.
Like, I'm going to hold this over your head as long as I can.
Yeah. He is a sick kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Malfoy knows about the egg hatching. He knows about the dragon. And then Ron gets a bite from the dragon.
Yeah, which he spends a long time not taking care of because they know Madame Pomfrey is a very smart nurse.
Yeah, and will recognize a dragon bite.
Yeah.
I think he tells her that it's from a dog. He's like, yeah. I told her it was a dog, but I don't think she believed me. And it's like swelling and turning green.
Yeah.
But Malfoy visits the hospital wing to like make fun of Ron more.
Yeah, he says he was going to borrow a book.
Yeah, but he does borrow a book.
He takes it to cover the alibi, but ends up taking the letter as well.
Yeah, which, and this is a problem I have with the chapter as a whole, but especially this bit. It just feels very contrived. Like, of course it was the book with the letter, and of course Malfoy was spying through the curtains. It just, I don't know.
Well, my only guess would be, how many books is Ron carrying around?
That's true. That's a really good point.
Where else would Ron think to hide a letter that he's, I'm sure, spending this whole week reading over and over?
Yeah,
thinking,
I guess.
When am I getting rid of this dragon?
Yeah, yeah. Because the letter has the details of like, meet us at this tower at midnight on this night. So Malfoy knows the whole plan.
Everything.
It comes together all pretty neatly for me, this chapter.
Yeah. It's interesting for it to be, hey, let's introduce this character and get rid of them entirely.
Which Norbert. Character? Norbert?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just like within this one short chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. In a series where the plot to me comes together in a really satisfying way, where it builds really nicely, this chapter just kind of comes out of nowhere. It totally breaks this rising action that we have with Snape and Quirrell and the stone. And it's really here functionally just to set up the next chapter. It's just a weird little chapter to me, especially so close to the end of the book.
I like it a lot.
I like it fine.
I know you hate all animals.
That's not why I'm... That never
know,
was part of the criticism.
But I love animals, and it's just nice to see Hagrid's passion and like, okay. Oh, he's always wanted a dragon. He's finally getting to spend a little bit of time with one.
Okay. And I think there is something to be said for the chapters in these books that are just like hanging out at Hogwarts. You know, stuff that's not necessarily consequential to the larger plot, but that just kind of builds up this world of magical creatures and kids getting into trouble and all that stuff.
But overall, it does play a pretty big role. We'll find out, I believe, next chapter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is. Yeah, it's all setting up little things. But it, to me, this chapter very much seemed like Rowling was like, I need this to happen in the next chapter. What can I set up before it to build up to that, to like set the stage for it? It's a fine chapter. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to bring that literary criticism here and put my 2 degrees to work.
I know you hate animals. You hate
that's
people
not at all what
animals.
I said. So they Ron is in the hospital wing with his messed up hand, so he cannot participate in the plot to get Norbert to Charlie's friends. So Harry and Hermione take Norbert under the invisibility cloak at night.
Yeah, which Hagrid is finally willing to give up Norbert because he knows he's going to a safe place.
Yes.
I liked that they said right away, you can't keep this dragon, get rid of it. And he says, it's a baby, it's just going to die. Which a lot of people will get baby animals. Mm-hmm. And realize, oh, I don't want to take care of this. And they'll either just set it loose in the wild or flush it.
Yeah.
And just, oh, it's not my problem anymore. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. So Hagrid is a responsible pet. Well, responsible is maybe taking a leap. But he has the best interests of the pet in mind.
Yes.
There's also a really good line when they go down to like tell Hagrid about this plan at some point. And Hagrid's like, he's only a baby. And then it says the baby banged its tail on the wall, making the windows rattle.
Yeah. Dragons are big.
I really liked that. I thought that was very funny. Yeah, so Harry and Hermione go to take Norbert to the tower, lugging a dragon around the school at night.
Underneath their invisibility cloak.
Yes, and they
which
see...
Which is conveniently big enough for a crate holding a dragon and two students.
Well, but that's a fun little detail that they develop later on in the books. I forget which book it is, but they say... it's got to be like book five or something. They say like the invisibility cloak was starting to seem small with all three of them under it. Like you could see their ankles whipping by because they're getting bigger. Mm-hmm. But here at 11, I kind of believe it.
Yeah.
So Harry and Hermione take the dragon up to the tower and they see along the way, because they're invisible, McGonagall pulling Malfoy by his ear through the halls, saying like, wandering around at night, I'm gonna have Professor Snape deal with you. And Malfoy's like, Harry Potter's here, he has a dragon. he's giving away an illegal dragon. And McGonagall's like, you're telling such tall tales.
Yeah, she says, well, first, like, she's pulling him and she says, and 20 points from Slytherin, wandering around in the middle of the night, how dare you. And I like that when he says, but Harry Potter has a dragon. What utter rubbish.
It's really good.
Yeah. And as soon as they get to the top of the staircase, the top of the tower.
Yeah.
Hermione gets out and does a sort of jig.
Yeah. I thought that was a little weird and out of character.
She's just excited that Malfoy's in trouble for breaking the rules that she's breaking.
I mean, I guess maybe when you take it from the perspective of Hermione hates rule breakers, so she's excited that Malfoy gets in trouble.
No, but I think at this point she hates
It always seems Malfoy. Like it's Harry and Ron with that animosity towards Malfoy. I feel like Hermione hasn't really shown it up to this point so much.
No, I think she's always had it. She's never going to, like, she's never...
She hasn't punched him in the face like Ron has. Yet. Maybe that's just me injecting some... Draco Hermione stuff into it, but I never think that she hates Malfoy quite as much as the others.
No, I think she definitely does.
Okay, well, she dances.
She does a jig and she says she's tempted to sing,
and Hermione tells her not to, which
Harry tells her not
to. And I like to think obviously that is Harry saying like, don't sing because somebody will hear us and we'll get in trouble, but also, Hermione, please don't sing because you can't. That's just what I like to think, though. So they give the dragon off to Charlie's friends, who appear with broomsticks, and they have a little sling.
Made the sling themselves and are confident that it's going to carry this dragon all the way
to Romania.
Yeah.
I wonder how fast brooms can go. Did they talk about that with the Nimbus 2000? Like, how long of a journey is that? I like also that the friends are totally cool with this idea, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're going to take stops and hang out with it on the way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also that they're okay transporting an illegal animal.
Over the cover of darkness. The cover of darkness, I mean.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So they do that. And then Harry and Hermione start walking back.
So relieved.
Yeah.
They're finally done with that. There's nothing to worry about.
These dum-dums.
Not even the invisibility cloak.
Left the invisibility cloak at the tower and get caught by Filch. And that's it for the chapter.
That's how it ends.
Yeah.
They'd left the invisibility cloak on top of the tower.
To me, this is the most plausible part of the plot of this chapter. Like, I have problems with the whole, like, Malfoy borrowed a book and it was the one with the letter in it thing, but like, I absolutely understand, like, going through this, like, very regimented plan that you're like, we can get in big trouble for this, and then making the most stupid mistake on the way back.
Yeah, like, it all worked perfectly. It's fine. Malfoy is in trouble. And I'm looking forward to refreshing my memory about what McGonagall says, knowing that Malfoy just accused Harry of having a dragon and going up that tower and Harry being caught on that tower.
I don't think McGonagall believes for a minute that there's... I think she would believe it if she got wind that Hagrid had a dragon. Like, if Draco had went to her and said, like, Hagrid is housing a dragon in his cottage, I think she would at least investigate that. I don't know that she would think that Harry, and Hermione especially, would be involved in some kind of plot involving the dragon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's how the chapter ends. And that's why I say it, like, it's very much just setting up the next chapter.
I mean, the chapter leads into the next chapter.
Well, yeah, of course, every chapter sets up the next chapter, but you know what I mean.
I disagree. I think this chapter is more important than you're giving it credit.
Okay. We'll see. But that brings us to Spell of the Week.
Yes. And I did look into healing spells inspired by Dittany and Ron's hand. And there are several, but there are some we're saving for later.
Yeah.
I looked into some memory erasing spells because that's what wizards have had to do to muggles who see dragons, and could only find one, which I definitely want to save for later.
Yes.
And I decided to go with a spell that would have helped them out if they had realized they had forgotten their invisibility cloak, but didn't have time to turn around.
Okay.
So I went with the disillusionment charm. This you can cast on yourself or you can cast on someone else. And it essentially turns your body into what movies think chameleons are, but that's not really how chameleons work, where your body matches the background. You know, you blend in with the background. Meanwhile, chameleons change color based on emotion. It has nothing to do with their environment.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
So they don't blend in with things?
No.
Okay.
No, they're usually bright green. They can turn into different colors. It's mostly emotion. It's mostly communication. They can't like perfectly blend in with things.
Okay. I'm learning a lot.
That's what we're here for on this podcast.
Okay. So you chose the disillusionment charm.
Yes.
Does that have like an incantation or anything?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that the Harry Potter wiki lists?
Nope.
All right, cool.
Yeah, so it's a spell to conceal a target. And I had never heard of the Wonder Book of Spells.
That sounds familiar. Why does that sound familiar?
It is apparently something that J.K. Rowling made with Sony. She made like a book of spells that you can perform and like you can see yourself performing them.
You can see yourself performing?
That's what it seems to be here.
Wonder Book, Book of Spells. Yeah, I got to Google this right now. Hold up.
It's a PlayStation 3 game.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You didn't specify it was a PlayStation 3 game.
With Sony.
Okay. That doesn't mean that it necessarily, they do other things.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah. Sony also had a whole big thing. Do you know what PlayStation Home is?
Was that the, like you had an avatar and you could decorate a house?
Yeah. It was basically like Second Life, except within the PlayStation 3. Second Life being a game where you make an avatar of yourself most of the time and like basically just live in a virtual world. And PlayStation Home was like that. And they did a bunch of integration with Harry Potter and you could like go to Hogsmeade and like dress up.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. PlayStation Home is now dead, as is the PlayStation 3. Yeah. But the Wonder Book of Spells. Yeah. That's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah. So the Wonder Book of Spells apparently says that it can turn the user invisible, mm-hmm. or whoever it's cast on and completely okay. invisible versus elsewhere. Every other reporting of it claims that it just makes the
user
okay. Change the look of their body.
Was
to match the background.
The Wonder Book of Spells, did it use the PlayStation Move controllers?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so that does it for our episode, I think. We want to encourage our listeners to send us emails to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com, where you can send us corrections if we mess something up. You can comment on what we talked about, or just generally like share your experiences with the Harry Potter series. That's, I think, part of the fun of this podcast, talking about when we were dumb kids reading these books or watching these movies. And we want to hear from you all talking about that. So you can send an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podtrificus. You can like us on Facebook, Podtrificus Totalis, follow us on Tumblr, anything like that. And we do, of course, have a website, podtrificustotalis.com, that has detailed show notes and all of our episodes and all that cool junk. And then, of course, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Podcasts. I think that's what they're calling the app now. They change it like every week. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find podcasts.
Yeah. And by basically. The time this goes up, who knows what it'll be called.
Yeah. Well, that was a big thing too. Apple, it used to be iTunes, and then they shifted it to like Apple Podcasts, and you're not allowed to call it iTunes anymore for podcasts. It's weird. Basically, if you can find podcasts somewhere, you can find us. And if you can't, maybe tweet at us and I'll fix that. The biggest one is Spotify, but we'll hopefully get on Spotify at some point. It's a complicated process. Yeah. So you can subscribe to us. You can review us, like us, whatever. Just, you know, interact with us. We like hearing from other people. And yeah, we will see you again for chapter 15.
The Forbidden Forest.